Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. Erin Gibson is a self-described Southern loudmouth. She's the co-host of the award-winning political absurdist comedy podcast, Throwing Shade. Erin has published a book of comedic essays. It's called Feminasty, The Complicated Woman's Guide to Surviving the Patriarchy Without Drinking Herself to Death. So what exactly inspired Erin to write this book?
Well, I wanted to write a feminist propaganda tool that was accessible to like an 18-year-old version of me. Because I was kind of I was a young lady who was really only interested in smoking Marlboro Lights and dry humping. And I wasn't really aware of the myriad of ways that the patriarchy was making my life and my choices and my existence impossible and hard.
Yeah, yeah. The title comes from your nickname on your podcast, Throwing Shade, which you co-host with Brian Safi. What does it mean to be feminasty?
Okay, I like to think of it as being an unapologetic crusader for your rights, even if people think you're a raging monster.
Would you mind reading the dedication to your book? Because I want to ask you a question or two about that.
Okay, absolutely. To women, you are not my competition.
Yeah, so that raises the question, of course. How big a problem do you think competition is among women?
Well, I think it's massive. And one of the problems with it is it's not like it's explicitly taught to us to see another woman and then just make sure that she's annihilated by all means necessary. It's like a subconscious thing that we're taught that there's limited men, money, jobs, positions, and that if... Then there's another woman right next to us who's vying for the same limited amount of whatever you want to put in there. So now the thing is like sometimes the competition is created by external forces. So like if you're looking at management positions or jobs in the C-suite, corporate suite, there are limited amount of jobs. So I think if we banded together instead of clawing our way over one another for this one special lady job that have been bestowed upon us by the benevolent men gracious enough to give us the opportunity, we could actually topple the problematic system in the first place rather than just fighting for the scraps that were being thrown.
Yeah, and that's a lofty goal. As you say in your book, you say that you want to make sure that women see through the patriarchy's lies and deceit and power-hungry motivations and find ways to subvert and destroy their system. So how do you do that?
I mean, look, it's not going to be easy, and I don't think it's going to be an easy process, but to recognize the female-focused industries who are run by men.
Yes.
Like, I have a whole chapter about the cosmetics industry, and I want to bankrupt those guys by diverting my eyelash and my eyes, my mascara and my eyeshadow dollars to women who are running those businesses.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. You have this whole essay about the cosmetics and industrial complex, big makeup. And as you point out in that essay, a lot of women think, and as you just mentioned, a lot of women think they're buying makeup from companies that are led by women. But these companies are actually run by men. So that raises the question, how do women find out which companies are being run by women so they can give them their money?
It took me so long to research and find companies that were run by women because it's not necessarily a thing that is a bragging right, shockingly enough, in the cosmetics industry. So I would say if you know it's owned by a big one of the, you know, Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, Revlon, etc., Louis Vuitton, it's probably not owned by a woman. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if it started out owned by a woman and is bought by Unilever or one of the big ones, you know, look at their board. Look at the people at the top.
Yeah.
Those are the people making all the money. Great that they're employing women, but I prefer that the people at the top of the cosmetic industry understand the difference between concealer and contour. You know what else? I really truly think there are so many, and I could go on for 50,000 days about this, but there are so many garbage ingredients in cosmetics. And I just don't think that if women were at the helm of these massive corporations, that they would be putting terrible stuff in the cosmetics because they're using them, their daughters are using them, their mothers are using them. There would be more of a sense of responsibility with the stuff that's going in them.
Yeah, Yeah, very well said. Yeah, I think you're right. I just want to get back to this idea, this competition among women theme that we were talking about a moment ago. How do you think competition among women is different than competition among men?
Well, I mean, definitely there's competition between all genders, but yeah. I think men, to me, men compete with the idea that even if they screw everything up, there's going to be another opportunity for them.
Yeah.
And women just don't have that in the back of their minds. I call it the hope differential.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, if you don't get the CFO position, maybe if all the executives die in a plane crash, you'll get another opportunity in 10 or 15 years. Like, the amount of things that you have to overcome to even get a second chance is just insurmountable.
Oh, yeah. I think so. I think so, yeah. So how did you transform into what you describe as the, quote, childless, career-obsessed, nail-biting, hell-bent feminist, she-devil banshee, end quote, that you are today? How did that happen? Because I don't think you were always that way, were you?
No, and I want to shout out to Missouri GOP candidate Courtland Sykes for writing an viral anti-woman screed and giving me that jewel of a label. He used it to, talk about what he didn't want his his daughters to grow into. And I have happily repurposed the phrase as a badge of honor. So it took me a while. I was lucky to have a friend, Tria Wood, who gave me a copy of Susan Faludi's Backlash when I was maybe a junior in college. And I devoured this book in 3 days.
Wow.
It's a massive book.
Yeah.
And it was amazing because I finally had the language, thanks to this book, to identify what I was experiencing and not just feel weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing with women, we're not really taught to see what's going on around us, so we just kind of feel bad all the time.
Yeah, you mentioned the language that Faludi uses in Backlash. Can you remember? Can you give me an example?
I remember there was one example of a woman who was working in construction. She was the only woman, and she would get in her locker at work, they would put pornography in there. They would put naked women and the like in there to intimidate her and sexually harass her. And this woman was a single mom.
Hmm.
And I just thought, how could you make someone's life that's already being made really hard by America? How could you make it even harder on a day-to-day basis? Just putting so many obstacles in front of her to make a living. And Susan just did a really good job of explaining women's like a specific woman's experience,
mm-hmm.
and then taking her critical mind and saying, this is why it's wrong. And I'd never seen the, this is why it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'd always just been like, oh, isn't Susan in a bad situation?
Yeah. And that's an ideal time. Junior high is a great time to have come across this book, to have read it, right? Because you're in the midst of forming your identity.
Yeah, but it wasn't. No, it was junior in college.
Oh, junior college, right.
I wish it was a junior.
Junior high,
I wish I'd like found this book. The closest thing I had was reading The Scarlet Letter and totally identifying with Hester Prynne.
Yeah. You have some problems with the breast cancer awareness industrial complex, if I can call it that. Can you tell me what you think they're doing wrong?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so when I found out that breast cancer awareness is the invention of AstraZeneca, which is one of the largest manufacturers of breast cancer drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's like if Walter White had started a meth addiction awareness campaign to help people find out if they love meth. It's really suspect.
Yeah.
So that just makes me not trust the whole complex of making women aware of breast cancer, because we're aware. We know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's being shoved in our face at all times that this is a danger. And by the way, not the number one cancer killer of women. It's lung cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you wouldn't think if you look at the propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. You have this great line in your book where you say there are antebellum elevators that you trust more than some of the charities associated with breast cancer.
Yes, and I'm from the South. I know a lot of antebellum elevators.
I bet you do. So breast cancer is something that has a lot of personal significance to you. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've come from a very big Irish Catholic family.
Third generation, right?
Third generation,
yeah.
That's right. Loud and proud, wearing my street rat hair everywhere I can. Well, I mean, I've lost two aunts, my grandmother to breast cancer, and my mother had cancer. My two cousins have all had breast cancer. It's kind of like our family thing to have breast cancer. And then personally, because my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, I got tested for the BRCA2 gene mutation, which I was positive for. So I opted to have a preventative mastectomy and kind of take care of the problem before the problem got me.
Was that a tough decision for you? Was that something you struggled with, whether or not you should do that?
It was. And I'll tell you, doctors didn't make it any easier. I had a gynecologist who asked me if I was, he asked what I was going to do if I wanted to breastfeed. And I said, well, I'm not going to be able to breastfeed if I'm dead.
No,
and I couldn't believe that I had to explain to people that why I wanted to do this. I was scared. I was really scared. I've lost people in my life who I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want the same thing to happen to me. And, or, you know, best case scenario, spend my 30s getting lumpectomies every year. It's just, it's not something I wanted to deal with. So I finally, this was like 8-9 years ago before Angelina Jolie had it done, Christina Applegate. This was when people didn't really understand the motive. And I think now it's a little more acceptable. People get it. They understand why you would have such a major surgery when you don't technically have anything wrong with you.
Mm. Yeah. You're also very, very passionate about having more women pursue careers in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I just feel like these industries are building the future without the input of over half the population. It makes no sense to me. I want all the brains possible on the jobs of building bridges, fixing climate change, perfecting medical equipment, developing a weed brownie that won't make me too high at the airport. I need all these things to happen.
Yeah. Do you have any specific ideas about what it's going to take to make that happen, to get more women pursuing STEM careers?
Yeah, I have like a 3-point plan.
Okay.
So I think first things first, we have to stop discouraging girls from engineering and math and science interests at young ages. We have to, if a little girl is interested in Legos or building blocks or anything that doesn't look quote unquote like girly, we don't take that out of their hands and put a Barbie in there.
Mm.
Number two, systems have got to be in place in U.S. colleges to eradicate gender stereotyping and sexual harassment by professors. There isn't a good one right now, and it's still a situation where it has to happen to 3 or 4 women before anybody gets stopped, educated, threatened that they might lose their career for sexually harassing women out of theirs. And then number three, in the actual industries themselves, we need to take a good hard look at the workforce and make sure that it's not just diverse, but that women and people of color who are working in these industries are supported, heard, and protected from any scientist too stupid to recognize their own bias.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's a solid 3-point plan. The subtitle of your book is The Complicated Woman's Guide to Surviving the Patriarchy Without Drinking Yourself to Death. So if you could give the complicated women out there who are listening to this interview one piece of advice, what would it be?
Okay, this is the thing that I think is the most important, and it's a little overarching, but I think day to day, doesn't matter what the situation, do not let anyone dilute your power.
Mm.
Women are constantly told to be less than, to be quiet, to be, you know, under, and don't let anyone do that. You have to, and as a matter of fact, when someone tells you not to do something, you should do the improv rule, which is do it twice as much.
Yeah. What about those of us who are part of the patriarchy, the complicated and in some cases, perhaps not complicated enough men? What should we be doing to help women survive the patriarchy? What can we do?
This is such a great question. Okay, number one, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it's hard to hear things that you might be doing wrong, everybody makes mistakes and we're all victims on some level of the way that we were raised. And I think that feminism can definitely help men with overcoming their own gender obstacles. And number two, stand up for women when we're not around.
Mm-hmm.
When it's locker room time, when you're hanging out with your bros, BW3s, and something comes up that you don't think is the right attitude towards women, say something.
Yeah.
We need allies at all turns in every place to stand up for us.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, right now, it's more powerful when a man stands up for us than when we stand up for ourselves. We're still at that point.
Yeah, which is very sad. considering this is 2018. Yeah. Do you think, I would imagine you think men should read this book. Are you optimistic that they will?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I hope there are guys out there that are ready for this and they can learn a lot. I've wrapped almost everything in absolute gutter humor, so I guarantee it'll be the funniest way to become an ally.
Erin Gibson is the author of Feminasty, The Complicated Woman's Guide to Surviving the Patriarchy Without Drinking Herself to Death. You can find out more about Erin at wpr.org/beta.